Yes, and thank you for that very nice introduction. Welcome. It's great to have you here. And before we get going, I want to say Merry Christmas. This is kind of your Christmas card from me. Of course, we will have our Christian-specific segment later in the show. That'll be the big Christmas card for you, so look forward to that. We welcome each and every one of you. It's a very special show. It is the Christmas edition of the show, and of course our maiden voyage under the new banner, Parish of the Patriots. I am your host, of course, Grandpa Dan, and yes, it's going to take me just as long to get used to saying those things as you. The difference is when I mess up, I can go back and edit and correct it, and you'll never know the difference. And because I also want to remind you, it is the same show, and as a result, this is the 97th installment. Just a lot of things coming together. Installment number 97. It's the Christmas show. We got a brand new banner. We've remodeled the building a bit, and I'm excited. Give it a chance. It'll grow on you. It's got to grow on me, too. But I think we're headed for really cool things here in the upcoming year. 2020 has been something, to say that. Something to say the least. 2021 will no doubt be interesting as well. As always, we like to start off thanking those who aren't shy. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. You know, it's always awkward. It really is. I try to have fun with it because the truth of the matter is it's kind of awkward, you know, to be like, pay your tithes, you know, your financial support's appreciated. But when I went and checked the mail today, I had like one of those bulk mailings, you know, they send out just like basically to resident. And it was from one of the popular local churches, you know, and I went ahead and looked in there. And of course, I knew it'd be a fundraising thing, which it was. And they're talking about how rough it is for them. You know, it's tough. They're trying to do all these cool things, all the Lord's work. But they only have $1.5 million in the budget. And next year, you know, with everything they want to do, they're $1.9 million short. So really, we need you to send what you can. If I had $1.5 million in my budget, I'd just shut up. I don't. So yeah, I decided I'm not going to feel kind of awkward and uncomfortable asking you to, you know, support the show, support the congregation, support your local parish. We do like to get into the, of course, if we had everybody supporting it, then it would get tough to go through the listener supporter mailbag. But you know what? I'd cross that bridge if we ever got there. As it is now, we are able to go to the listener supporter mailbag, and that's what we always like to start off with. So let's get to it. Got a lot to cover. We're going to have a really good, a really important topic to discuss this week. It's one of those things that it just kind of came up during the week, and I thought about it, kicked it around a couple days, and it's like, no, we're going to talk about this on the show, and it's something really important. So, we'll get into that. And, of course, like I say, we'll have a Christmas message because we have a Christian-specific segment as we go on. Let's get to the listener supporter mailbag. Always great to hear from each and every one of you. First up, from Triangle Whip, Grandpa, have a great Christmas. Well, I hope all of you do, too. Like I say, I consider this show being the Christmas edition show. This is my Christmas card to all of you because I can't send Christmas cards to all of you. But I wish I could. But the show itself is one big Merry Christmas card. And yes, I enjoy saying Merry Christmas. I'm saying Merry Christmas. I'm making it a point to say Merry Christmas. Wow, I just accidentally tore somebody's Christmas card. I was getting so excited here. I make it a point IRL to go around and tell people Merry Christmas just because I know if I happen across somebody that's a communist deep down inside, they won't like it. Debbie, hope this finds you well. Loving the show. After listening to the Thanksgiving show, I would gladly give up my right to vote to stop these insane women from voting. Women seem to look for security, and since many are crazy and can't find a man, they look to the government to take care of them. Ah, yes. You know, the lie, here's the thing. The lie with feminism. And it is a lie, and it's a lie from the devil. And it's always the same, because the devil's lies, and yes, I'm kind of launching off into a Christian thing here, but these things are all so tied together, and it's kind of one of the things we do here on the show is help folks to see that the Christian, the spiritual, and what we see in the political and the physical world are not two separate things. You know, we don't do the modern cuck church thing here where this is just like a club and this is this and these things are separate and we don't get into these things. We realize here one of the things we look at as a congregation is that these things are intertwined together. For lack of a better way to put it, these things are intertwined together and you can't separate the two. The thing about feminism is it's a typical lie from the devil. He tells women, this is going to make you happy. This makes you empowered. This fulfills your lie. And it's all a crock of shit. And yo, you will not hear any other pastor say, your local reverend will not phrase it like that, but I will, because sometimes there's just no other way to say it. It is a crock of shit. And women's lives are made miserable by this. And when you point this out and you say, oh, wow, you know, we should get allowing having women vote has been an unmitigated disaster. And they say, oh, you see, you hate women. You just want women to be oppressed. But yet it's a disaster for women, too. It's not like when we say that, it's not like, oh, wow, you know, it's a disaster for the patriarchy. I miss my patriarchy and my patriarchal privilege, but it's made women's lives better. It's ruined it for everybody. Feminism, it literally has ruined. Who knows how many women's lives, countless millions of women's lives have been made more miserable because of feminism. And yet when you point these things out, they tell you what? Oh, you hate women. You want women to be miserable. You just want to go around and just crush them and treat them like dogs. You know, nobody really wants to do that. But it is. It's a lie. And it always comes back to that. Oh, this will make you happy. But it doesn't. The devil's lies are always structured like that. This will make you happy. And then once you get invested in it, once you buy into the lie and you get invested in it and you put more and more years into it and to where you get to that point to where you can't deny that it was a lie and you got tricked, you got conned. But then it gets hard to divest yourself of it because now you've wasted years and it's really tragic. It's really sad. Feminism destroys society. Feminism destroys families. It destroys societies. But most of all, it destroys women. And it's, you know, it's great, Debbie, that you realize that. And I wish more people did. Let's keep it going here. And I pull these notes when I get them either out of email or out of the envelopes. And I usually try to remember to write, but I forgot to put the name on, you know, to attach a name to it. But you'll know whose message it is because I don't remember which envelope it came out of. Anyway, from a fan in the great white state of Vermont, whiter than Texas. Just, yes. Merry Christmas, Grandpa. And again, Merry Christmas to all of you. We will not let them steal our Christmas joy from us. Sorry, they would love to do that. They would love to. Don't you love how they're going around debating? I was reading an article the other day. They're having a big debate on whether the UK government should officially cancel Christmas. Did they really think they could do that? They're not really having that discussion here. I guess they're trying to present it as foregone conclusion that, you know, there's a virus, there's a doom flu, and if you don't want to kill everybody, then you will cancel Christmas. I couldn't believe that. Well, the UK government needs to officially declare Christmas canceled this year. Yeah, you know, you can stick that right up your ass because you're not going to force us to cancel Christmas. You're not going to be able to go door to door, house to house in every community in the country and tell you you're not allowed to have Christmas. Piss off. We're not going along with that. Tony's not a note sender, but he is a financial supporter. So thank you, Tony. Very much. Mr. T coming through week in, week out. Grandpa, thank you for being a voice of reason in clown world. I don't know. Sometimes I feel pretty unreasonable. Grandpa may be going off the rails this week. No. Well, you know, it's hard to keep your reason in a completely unreasonable society. And you know, we focus on truth. And that's what I encourage everybody to do. And I pointed out the other day in the social media internment camp that is known as Gab. I'm always back and forth on this. You know, I've recently gone through and still kicking around what to do with my Gab account. I go through there and I post a few things up, but it's you're just, it's just an echo chamber, I guess. It's, there's, you're just isolated. I don't know. I mean, some days it's fine. You get some interesting back and forth, but I just go through these spells of like, I should just cancel. I think about just deleting my Gab account, and I've been like that here recently. But to get back on point, I made a point the other day. I did post something I thought that was insightful. Is everything you look around in this collapsing society, everything, virtually all of it, is built on and centered around lies. I mean, it's so absurd. I mean, it's they used to be a little more discreet about it, but now it's just they're making a point to rub it in everybody's faces. It's reached that level where it's just outright insulting, because it's right out in the open, and they're telling everybody to go wrong with it, along with it. But everything that you're looking at in this society that you don't like, it's all based on foundation, all the way up to the pillars, the sheetrock, the drywall, everything, the doors of this building, the whole thing is constructed of lies. And with that having been said, do not underestimate the power of the truth. It's hard to understand how it is powerful, but trust me, it's powerful. That's why they work so hard to keep it shut down all the time. If it wasn't a threat, if it wasn't powerful, then they wouldn't work so hard to shut it down. So yes, I appreciate it. We all do try to be a voice of reason, but more importantly, a voice of truth. And finally, as we wrap up our listener supporter mailbag, many, many congratulations, Dan, on the new name for the show. I think Parish of the Patriots is a winner on all fronts and will successfully achieve its objective, not only for the network, but most importantly in spreading your unique uncut truth of the Christian message. A very Merry Christmas to you and yours, Phil, and very much appreciate it. And again, as I pointed out, zero is changing on the content of the show itself, if you haven't figured that out already, if you're a longtime listener. But I think with the new banner and all this, you can feel a little more comfortable, like perhaps sharing it with your normie friends or your family. It's like, oh, well, this is a podcast I listen to, and you don't have to worry about them being triggered, you know. So it'll just make it a little easier to share. Like I said, when people come in, they don't misunderstand what it is we do here, and perhaps they too will become members of the Congregation of Truth. So as we get wrap up with that, we're gonna keep on trucking. We got a lot to cover, as always, this week on this special Christmas edition of the show. I do appreciate all of you who do financially support the show. As I've been pointing out lately, it's like, you know, if everybody that listened, you know, chipped in $5 a month, I would have a $1.5 million budget just like that. No, I wouldn't, but it would be really cool. So it's not like I'm asking you to empty your savings account for the show. And, you know, like I said, those of you who do support the show, I really do appreciate it. You're in the less than 1% that do that. So, yeah, much, much appreciated. So we're getting on as we keep on moving here in the show. This week is one of those rare occasions where I just almost recorded myself drinking coffee there. In fact, I might have caught a part of it. I should go back and edit it, but I won't, because I don't have time for that. This is one of those rare weeks where I jotted down an idea of something I thought we would discuss, and it morphed in between the time of doing that and the time of getting here and actually recording the show. And that was this idea of, you know, of course, we talked a little bit last week. We touched a bit last week on what it means to be a patriot. And no, we're not going to hammer patriot over and over and over every week. That is not the intention. We talk about whatever I feel like talking about each and every week. But I was jotting down the idea of, you know, misdirected patriotism, how they will try to funnel your energy as a patriot into things that are not, shall we say, in your interest. And when I jotted that down, I was thinking in terms of how the government will try to, you know, whip the people up into a frenzy over, say, supporting a war on the other side of the planet that doesn't have anything to do with you. I mean, those of you who are old enough, or like me, more than old enough, to remember 9/11, you know, and like that was such a suspicious event, shall we say. And yet it was on TV and it was so striking that the vast majority of people never stopped to consider, never asked any questions, never, you know, yes, obviously people did ask questions, but I'm talking about the majority of the people. They whipped the people into this patriotic frenzy, and they were ready to march off to those who attacked our great country on that fateful day, namely Iraq and Libya. And we had to demonize North Korea. Wait, what the hell? I thought it was Saudi Arabians that, oh, who were those dancing guys? What was with that? Nobody got into it. Well, only a few amount of people, relatively few people, started questioning it. But you weren't even allowed to question it. That was back when leftists were ostensibly, you know, supposedly anti-war, and even they were forced to shut up because they had patriotic frenzy. You hate America. It's time with freedom fries, because France was hesitant to attack random countries in Afghanistan because not Saudi Arabia. Everybody's whipped into a frenzy to attack countries in the Middle East not named Saudi Arabia, even though we were told it was a bunch of Saudi Arabians who attacked the country. And that was what patriotism was. And it was a classic example of the government manipulating people's patriotism and well-meaning. You know, I mean, you can sit there and say, well, people are stupid. but people can be well-meaning, you know, and the people wanted something to rally around, and it was provided for them. And that energy was funneled into something completely counterproductive. What did you get out of the Iraq war? What did you get out of the ongoing war that never ends in Afghanistan? What are you getting out of attacking Libya? What are you getting out of any of these conflicts? We don't get anything out of them. Somebody is. Somebody's getting rich out of it. It sure as hell ain't you. It sure as hell ain't the troops. The troops get their legs blown off and shit, and their minds all scrambled up, and basically their lives destroyed in many cases. They ain't getting nothing out of it, but you're told to be a good patriot. Do as you're told. And just happens to be what the oligarchy wants. This was what I had planned to discuss. And then I am in the social media internment camp, Gabschwitz. Been Gabschwitz. It would almost be a relief to be on a pedal powered skull smashing machine in Gabschwitz at times. It's because it's worse. I'm subjected so often. You know, you go through the feed and it's horrible. Horrible memes. But nonetheless, once in a while something interesting comes up, and somebody posts, and I'm going to be real vague about this because I don't want to in any way, shape, or form promote this. But somebody put a video up in my feed, and in this video, this guy is calling for, and like I said, I'm kind of being vague here because this is such a bad idea. I don't want to in any way, shape, or form be able to be accused of supporting it. But somebody had a video up and of a guy, and this guy is calling for all you patriots out there, to get your guns, get your militias together, and march on Washington, D.C., and demand that something be done about this blatant election fraud. Now, if you're a listener and you're the one that put the video up and you were being well-meaning, please don't misunderstand. I'm not dogging you here. I'm really not. I'm not jumping all over your case. But I did watch the video, where I watched like 90% of it. And it was so, you know, you see people promoting things that are so ill-conceived and so not thought through. That once in a while, I mean, I just, you know, ignored it. I didn't do anything with it. There it was, I guess. You know, I don't have any control. I can't delete content off of Gab or whatever. You know, I'm just a guy. And that would normally be that. But then I got thinking about it. And, you know, there are people out there that are going to watch this and be like, yeah, let's do it. We got to do something. And then I started thinking of in the context of what I'd already jotted down of this idea of misdirected patriotism. And I thought, you know, this is really a new angle to look at this. And a warning. And honestly, there may be listeners to the show who have seen this video and are like, maybe you're planning to participate in it. And I would be derelict in my duties if I didn't point out some of the problems with this great call to arms. You know, it's... I give people the benefit of the doubt, you know, like whoever this guy in the video. Yeah, I'm not one of those people. And I, in fact, there's few things that I find more cringy than, you know, people have this attitude of everybody that disagrees with me is a Fed. And we don't do that. I give people the benefit of the doubt. I assume, perhaps incorrectly at times, but I assume that people have good intentions. They just are emotionally worked up, and people between this doom flu lockdown nonsense and this in your face, we don't care if you know, election fraud or whatever the case may be. I mean, people are in a real emotional state of flux. This is, once again, it's a good thing to have a spiritual grounding, because it helps guard you against getting worked up and making emotional decisions that are to your detriment. And another thing is, with all of these things happening, you have people now that are all of the sudden realizing that this system is utterly corrupt. They have come to the awakening since November. Since early November, they've suddenly come to realize it's like somebody got up and opened the blinds and the sun shined through, and they realize that, oh my gosh, I live in a corrupt system. And the rest of you out here, such as myself, we've been pointing this shit out for years, and they mocked us. But that's okay. That's okay. It's great. You're late to the party, but we're glad you came. But what you have to realize is you got these people that are late to the party. They were a normie 6 months ago, but now since early November, they realize, we live in an utterly corrupt system. And now they're all emotionally worked up, and you know, they haven't had time to work through this that we on the dissident right, we on the right who've been out here saying this for years, they haven't had the time to work through this. And it'd be really good to help them not make some of the same mistakes that others have made. And this is serious. This isn't about just, oh, this is a stupid idea. And it is a stupid idea. It's utterly retarded. And we're going to get into that here in a minute. But it's very important. It's not about like, oh, I'd be smarter than you. I don't claim to be the smartest person in the world by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I'm just an average guy. If I was the smartest person in the world, I would have a budget of $1.5 million and saying I'm $1.9 million short for all the things I want to do. But obviously I'm not. I'm just sitting here just making ends meet, speaking the truth. But here's the thing, why this is important, because people's lives, people that are well-intentioned, well-meaning, that maybe watch this video and say, yeah, I'm going to do that, are going to have their lives destroyed, ruined. Their families will be affected. These are real people. Now, maybe the guy making the video is well-intentioned, but you know, if you're well-intentioned and you still screw somebody's life up, you have to own that. You have to own that. People's real people, not just these aren't characters that exist in some void. We're talking about real people that have good intentions, people that love their country and love their people, want to stand up and quote unquote do something, and we're going to get into that here in a minute, are going to have their lives ruined, their families destroyed, their futures eliminated. This is the things that can happen from perhaps being well-intentioned, perhaps not, but people being sucked into things that don't work towards their benefit. And again, I would be derelict in my duties as a truth teller if I didn't point these things out. If I simply looked at that video and said, whoo, I wouldn't do that, and left it at that. I thought about it. Real people's lives being destroyed that, you know, are going to need to perhaps play a role in things that are to come. Just because they knew they had to do something, and this guy says, here's the something, and they jump on, and they get their lives destroyed. And I thought, you know, it isn't enough to sit here and go, I wouldn't do that, and just walk off from it. So I thought we would discuss it. Like I say, in this video, the guy's calling for everybody, get your militias together, get your boys together, get your guns together, and this guy says, we're going to march on Washington, D.C. He says, you want to be sure to travel in large groups, because then, see, the police, if you go alone, the police would just arrest you and put you in jail. But you want to be in a large group. That way the police will be afraid to fight you. This is what this guy is saying with a straight face. And He says you want to be in large group. That way the police will be afraid to fight you. And you can just tell them, look, we're going to take care of all these anti-police people for you. So just step aside. Y'all are sitting here going, this is real. This is real. I would put a link up to it. But see, that could be interpreted as somehow promoting this thing. And I refuse to be shoehorned into that position. And yes, that's how much like the media and such, they lie. That's how much these people lie. They will sit there and take a show that's dedicated to point out how stupid this is. So, yeah, well, you put up a video of it. So by definition, you promoted it. But it exists. Trust me, it's there. Anyway, so he's saying to travel in large armed groups to Washington, D.C. And we're going to demand, this is what he says, we're going to demand, not ask, he says this, not ask, we're going to demand that this election fraud be addressed. Okay, since, again, I'm a benefit of the doubt kind of guy, let's work through this, because apparently this guy hasn't worked through it. Apparently this guy hasn't worked through it. So I will work through it for you, because if you happen to be listening and perhaps you've seen this thing and you're maybe kicking around the idea of, you know, I can't sit around here. Somebody's going to do something. And you're kicking this idea around and maybe you're thinking about doing it. So let's go ahead before you make such a decision and let's work our way through this. So he's calling on randos. They have no idea who they are, to all converge with guns in hand on Washington, D.C. No chain of command. Nobody showing up with all these guns that's been vetted any way, shape, form. You have no idea who's who. Just let's get a bunch of random people to show up armed. What could go wrong? That's essentially what had been called for here. Let's work our way through this. He says to travel in large groups with your armed boys. That way the police will leave you alone because they won't want to mess with your large armed group. Okay, but well, let's go ahead and think this through. What if they don't? He's creating this fantasy here that, you know, the police pull your armed convoy over and they're like, well, buddy, we don't want any trouble. You boys just head on to D.C. Take care of business. Yes, God bless America. But let's say they don't do that. Let's say you got your group of, I don't know, 20 guys. You got your pretty black rifles with you, buckets of ammunition, you're ready to go, cocked, locked, and ready to rock, as they say. And you got your 20 guys, and you roll up here, and Barney and his partner pull you over. He says, what the hell are y'all doing? We got word that there was a dangerous militia group traveling to D.C. Are y'all part of said militia group? Well, yes, we are. And you best get out of our way, Barney. And let's say Barney pulls his pistol out and says, we ain't getting out of the way. I need all of you to get out of the car right now. Now you've got decision time. What the hell are you going to do? Barney didn't step aside as this guy painted this picture that he would. Barney has pulled his pistol out and says, put your guns down. Get your fat ass out of the car now. So you've got two choices here. You put down your pretty black rifles and get out of the car, and the rest of Barney's boys show up and arrest you, and you go to jail and feel stupid. Or what? You're going to start shooting at the cops? I mean, really, what happens? This is essentially a bluff. He's calling on you to bluff. I hope he's calling on you to bluff. I give people the benefit of the doubt. I'm assuming he's publicly calling for you to go out there and bluff. Because heaven forbid if he's calling for you to go out there and just start gunning down cops. Because there's your two options. Well, you think the cops, if the cops get the order, there's a dangerous convoy of armed people, they're going to have a SWAT team pull out there. And you're going to have the choice of either put your guns down, put your hands on your head, get arrested, or you're going to shoot it out with them. Those are the two outcomes if you get pulled over, if you get stopped. I don't care how big of a group you've got. It's like you've got some kind of immunity. I'm sorry, there's more than two of us, Barney. You have to let us go. See, it's right here in the book. You know, if you lived in a rural environment, and you grew up in a rural environment, you probably started handling guns as a kid, if you listen to this show. And more than likely, one of the first things you were told is something along the lines of, you never pull a gun out on somebody unless you intend to shoot them. You don't whip it out and wave it around and act like a fool, because somebody will take that away from you and stick it up your ass, right? You were probably taught that. And yet you have these people that are saying, go out there and brandish your guns around and wave them around. But I'm not telling you to shoot anybody. It's stupid. There are two outcomes here from what this guy's calling for. You're either going to shoot it out with the police, or you're going to just put your guns down and get arrested. Then what was hell the point of that? Now, we've addressed that great scenario. Now, let's get past that. And all these randos now, all these randos now have descended on Washington, D.C. with their guns, as this guy says, not to ask, but to demand the election fraud be dealt with. Okay, so what happens when they inevitably tell you no? Really? I mean, you're going to go up there with your armed groups, okay, and demand from somebody, the government, I guess the whole city's the government. Is he going to march on Congress? Anyway, he's going to demand that this election fraud be addressed. And, okay, so inevitably, I can tell you the answer. Inevitably, they're going to tell you to piss off. They're going to say no. Okay, so then what's step B? He's got you out there waving your pretty black rifle around, demanding. Okay, so what are you going to do when they tell you no? Because they're going to tell you no. You think the oligarchy is going to roll over for you? No. So they're going to say no. So what's step B? You all get really mad and go home, or what? Is he calling for people to start shooting? I don't know. Because, again, you're going to be left with those two choices. Either go back home and feel like what the hell is the point of that, or I guess have a gunfight. Which I'm not sure what that's supposed to fix or solve. But, I mean, there's does anybody think this shit through? I mean, really, does anybody think this? Okay, so let's see here. What, again, I'm very humble. I don't sit here and like promote myself as super high IQ individual. Trust me, because I'm way smarter than you. I don't. I'm just an average guy. But I have the ability to try to at least think some of this shit through. So what happens when they say no? It's like this fantasy of we'll go up there and they're going to be so intimidated, they'll be afraid. They can't ignore us. Why? Because we're waving our wand around, which happens to look like a gun. We're waving our rifles around. But they are. They're going to tell you no. And then what? Then what? Now, you've got all these rando rambos who have showed up. And this scenario, this rosy picture that is being painted, is that everybody is a patriot on your side, showing up, demanding that this election fraud be dealt with because of America and our values or whatever the hell. But they're not. They're not all going to be on your side because nobody's vetted. Nobody knows who these guys are. Do you think Antifa or the feds, or I repeat myself, have like that shit branded, like tattooed on their forehead and be like, ha ha, wait, he's not one of us. No, do you think they can't go to the store and buy the same clothes that you're going to be wearing? And buy a set of camos at the Army Surplus store and walk out there with a rifle? You'll be able to tell. By the way, it'll be too late if you show up this thing. You'll be able to tell who they are because they'll be the ones surrounded by the media. They'll have their cameras all set up to capture them doing something outrageous. You'll all get branded a terrorist and, get arrested, maybe go to prison. Because, things like Charlottesville never happened. No, that's different. And how many guys, do you know, aside from James Fields, do you know the names of any of the guys that are sitting in prison now as a result of Charlottesville? Probably not. I mean, some of you do, obviously. But most of you, probably not. But yet their lives are ruined. They're sitting in prison now. Because they were well-meaning. They were showing up to a legal protest against tearing down the statues. I can tell you who's not in prison, by the way. The organizers of the event, none of them went to jail. None of them went to prison. I'm not sitting here saying they should be. They don't misinterpret what I'm saying, but I'm pointing out they didn't go to jail. But well-meaning guys who said, we got to do something, that went there in good faith. Hey, it's a legal protest. We're doing our thing. They were railroaded. Do you know how many communists who attacked the illegal protesters are sitting in prison over Charlottesville? Zero. Nada. None. Do you get how it works? We don't have the cards that we want. We got the cards that were dealt, and these are the cards that we've been dealt with. And again, there's a lot of people who just woken up to how corrupt the system is, and they're trying to play catch up. You know, it's, I'm not calling them stupid. I'm not saying they're foolish, but they're trying to play catch up. That's anybody. You know, if you get you a new job, you know, you may be a really smart, on the ball guy, and you get hired, a new job, and maybe it's even a job in the field that you've been doing for years. You're still going to be playing catch up because every business is going to have a different system. And you come in there and you're an architect. You're a great architect, and they've hired you, got a great resume. Welcome aboard. But they're probably going to be using a different, slightly different computer system, designing system. They want things a certain way. They have a little different vision of the way they want things. You're going to be playing catch up. And there's a lot of people who have just woken up to living in an utterly corrupt clown world, and they're playing catch up. It doesn't mean they're stupid. It just means they're trying to play catch up. And it's kind of our responsibility that have watched these things and been aware that we live in an utterly corrupt clown world for a while to help them along. We don't want to sabotage them. And we sure as hell don't want to see good, well-meaning people get their lives ruined because they have to do something. And it's something that's not constructive. And this is where it all comes from, because when you point these things out, and I will, and I can virtually guarantee you, I will get criticism for this. Yeah, well, you just want to sit around and talk. That's a problem. You're a bunch of cowards. You don't want to do something. Don't you realize somebody has to do something? Imagine for a moment that you're riding in a vehicle and there's a car wreck, and you flip, the vehicle gets flipped. You're in a van with a group of guys, and the vehicle flips over the guardrail, and you wind up down in the bottom of a street ravine. Nobody can see you, just you people driving by up there, they can't see you down, and you crash down in the bottom of the ravine, and you're all down there. You got no food, you know, water. You all crawl out of the wreckage, and you're sitting here going, you know, it's a steep ravine. It doesn't look like anybody can climb out. You have no food, you know, water. What the hell are we going to do? No cell service. And you're all sitting around, and everybody's like, man, we're in a mess. Everybody acknowledges we're in a mess. And it's obvious that, you know, somebody's got to do something. And suddenly a guy in the group stands up. He says, we got to do something. And everybody's like, yes, I know. We know. We got to do something. Yeah, this is a very dire situation. And the guy proceeds to pick up a sharp stick off the ground. And he says, grab you a stick, and we will gouge our eyes out. You know, well, that's doing something. It's not going to be productive. It's not going to get you out of the ravine. In fact, it's going to be self-destructive. But by golly, he's demanding you do something, and somebody's got to do something, so it must be the right thing. And you'd be the one guy in the group who's like, yeah, I don't think really gouging our eyes out is going to better the situation. Oh, you just want to talk. You just want to think about it. Come on now. We got to do something. Gouge your eyes out now. This is basically the type of situation we're dealing with here. This, when somebody is proclaiming to do something horribly counterproductive, then yes, doing nothing is better than that. May not be ideal. It's better than that. And to go ahead and drive home one final point on this, the basis of this demand, this attempt to, whether intentional or just simply misguided, and I can't judge what other people do. I don't know what's in other people's minds. But this attempt to misguide people's sense of patriotism into doing something self-destructive, what's the ultimate goal here? Well, we're going to demand, he says, that this fraudulent election be dealt with, be overturned, the fraud be done. We want to see people arrested. We want to see people, of course, are not going to do that. You're asking the oligarchy to arrest themselves, so it's pretty safe to say that's not going to happen. But what's the ultimate goal of it? The ultimate goal is what? To keep Trump in office, right? Because Trump won. I don't think Biden carried 20% of the vote. I don't think really even commies believe that. It's so absurd and ludicrous. But the end result is what? That the rightful president remain in office, which would be Trump. They want to keep Trump in office, right? But Trump already has the power to stay in office. I mean, Trump can declare martial law and stay in office. I mean, he can overturn, he can take this corruption, he can declare martial law, round the media up, and present directly to the American people all of the ugly evidence, unfiltered by the media, He has the power to do that, will he? I don't know. He's not listening to me. He's not asking me. I don't know what he's going to do, but he has the power to do that. And if he chooses not to do that, it means that he has decided it is not worth, he has weighed the risk and has decided it's not worth the risk to himself personally or to his family to make that call to declare martial law and stay in office. It would ruin his life. So he decides that that would be too big of a risk that could ruin his life. So he's not going to be willing to make that call to take that, which is, he has the weapon in his hand. He can wield it. He can do that. Will he? I don't know. But he has that power. And if he chooses not to do that, then he's decided it's not worth the risk. But yeah, you have people like this that are saying what? That you should go with no clear real goal or obviously any real planning or any real thinking this through, but you should go and risk ruining your life to keep Donald Trump, who, if he makes the call not to do martial law, is not willing to risk ruining his life. You see, he's telling you to march out there and risk ruining your life for a man who isn't willing to take the same risk for himself. Why would you do that? I mean, really, how does that make sense? He's got the power. He can declare martial law, use the military, and stay in office and present the voting fraud to the people and the evidence to the people, and hold tribunals, put people in prison who have participated in usurping and undermining the election. He has the power to do that. He's not like you or me. We just sit here. We don't have any real power. He's got the power to do that. And if he chooses not to do that, then that means he's not willing to take that risk, but you should. Because for all their shit-talking, the left is shit-talking like crazy about we're going to put Trump in prison once he's out of office. It's going to be a lot harder to do that. Your well-meaning patriotic self, they ain't going to blink an eye. And nobody's going to care when they throw your ass in prison. So it'd be a big deal to put Donald Trump, after he gets out of office, in prison. I say they're shit talking right now, but really, that's a bold move. That's a big gamer move to do that. Whether they would or not, I don't know. If he isn't going to be willing to use the power that's sitting there in front of him to keep that from happening, then so be it. You know, I mean, there's only so much you can do to support somebody, but if they're not willing to step up and do it themselves, then you're wasting your time. It's a bold move to put Trump in prison, but nobody's going to give a shit if your ass goes to prison, especially after the media gets done painting their narrative of how you're a bunch of armed terrorists, how this group of people that you have no idea who they were, but the media says has suddenly magically found them, and the media says they're you, are up there calling for mass death, or maybe even pop a few rounds off, and oh my gosh, it's a terrorist incident, and everybody who promoted this, everybody has anything to do with this, is going to be rounded up and tried as domestic terrorists, and any real support you might have had to do, like, say, these hundreds of thousands of people showing up and protesting in Washington, D.C., all that'll be shut down because you're all supporting the terrorism. I don't know how many times we have to see the same stupid show play out and people keep falling for the trick. Lucy pulls away the football. I'm so freaking shocked, Charlie Brown. Now, let's go ahead and paint another scenario here, where gathering a bunch of guys up with their guns actually would make some sort of sense. Let's paint another scenario. Let's say Donald Trump does declare martial law. Under the legal authority, he declares martial law, and then he puts, as a part of martial law, you know, he realizes there's all this friction now in the country. Let's say he puts different military officers in charge of different regions, different states, whatever the case, you know, however much they wanted to break it down, of the country. And this military officers, they're in charge and they put out a call. We're going to deputize certain segments of the population. If you want to be a part of, you know, keeping the peace, show up. And these people, you go down there and you show up and you says, yes, I have my weapons. And yes, I love America and God and Jesus and everything else, and I want to be a part of the deputized force. And okay, you're going to fill out an application. They're going to check your background and see if, you know, you've got issues that could be a problematic in that area. And and then after you're vetted, then you'll go through some training, and then you end up officially deputized. And then you and your guys who have been trained together and have been vetted, so you can kind of trust, and you have a command structure, because they're going to give you orders. You're going to go into this area. We've got some trouble in there. You need to go in and patrol and keep the peace. And you go and you patrol. You see, that's how it works. That is how your scenario of what can you do, you know, for market with your black rifle, that's a scenario where that works. Calling for a bunch of randos that you have no idea, nobody's vetted, you don't know if anybody's friend, enemy, whatever, just showing them to get a bunch of guns together and show up. And see, that's not how that works. That isn't going to work. But see, this is a scenario where, yes, this would work, because what do you have? You have a command structure, you have discipline, you have people who've been vetted so that everybody knows that, you know, you don't have an enemy disguising to be you, and you have people with a shared goal because you have a command structure. You have the orders come down, go over here. Okay, well, what are we doing? Well, your orders are to go in here and patrol. If there's problems, then you do A, B, C. I don't know. I'm not going to get into details, but that's a point of, you know, what a really thought through plan, you know, well thought out plan, I should say, would look like. Not all of you get together. Let's get a bunch of people. I have no idea who they are that are armed and march out here. What the hell could go wrong? I don't know. I don't know. Look, here's the thing. At the end of the day, you all grown up. I ain't your daddy. And you do what you want to do. You know, if you still think this is a grand idea and what you should do, you know, I have no control over you. You do what you want. I am free of any guilt by not pointing these things out. I would share in the guilt of you ruining your life if I knew these things and didn't share them with you. But now my hands are clean. You know, I pointed out, we thought through this because people promoting this apparently aren't thinking through it. Or if they are, they're not sharing it with you. But we have thought through it here together. I've pointed out the flaws, the obvious, undeniable flaws in this idea. And now you do you, fam.
You just don't want it.
Well, hey, I can't stop you. You're going to do what you're going to do, but you can't say nobody when it turns up and you're sitting in jail and it didn't work out like they told you it would work out. And even though you were well intentioned and you didn't have any ill intent, and they paint you up, you know, paint a picture of you that's nowhere near accurate. Don't say nobody warned you because you've been warned. This sort of thing doesn't end well. Look, and we got to wrap up. We got to get into our Merry Christmas. We're going to get merry. Going to be very merry here. we got to wrap up. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. But the thing is, whether it's the government or there are always going to be people who are going to try to misdirect your patriotism, your love of people, your love of your nation, or whatever the case may be. Look, we get that, you know, things are bad. You know, everybody gets that. You're not the only one that realizes somebody's got to do something. And so often people buy into the bullshit. They buy into this mindset that, you know, the narrative, you think you're not buying into the narrative, but you are. And that narrative is that the communists always win. That the winds always blow in one direction, and that direction is leftward. And the winds, the things happen, always fall into place to where the communists come out smelling like roses. And that's not reality. I've said for years that the only thing holding this country together is a sense of relative economic prosperity. There's nothing left. That's the only thread that has been holding this shit show together for years now. This isn't new. For years now. And now, in the past year, in a massive power grab, just pure greed power grab, they've done the doom flu lockdowns as a massive power grab. To the point that they're dictating to you how close you can stand to people, whether or not where you can go, whether you can open your business, how many, whether you can have your church service, whether you can, you know, that you got to wear a mask. They've done this massive power grab. And in so doing, they're in the process of destroying, and well along the road of destroying what? That sense of relative economic prosperity. The one last thing that was holding this shit show together, and make no mistake, they've got to hold it together. They have a globalist agenda. This doesn't just end with America. they have a globalist agenda, and to do that, they've got to keep this quote-unquote United States together. But the only thing holding this shit show together is people felt like, well, I'm still doing okay economically, but they're destroying that with their greedy power grab. They're not super smart. They're not stupid, but they're not super smart. They made that trade. They've rolled the dice and made that gamble that they can keep you whipped up over the fear of a flu to the point to where you don't care if you're living in utter poverty as long as they keep you protected from this virus that they're telling you is so dangerous. That's the gamble they're taking. And it is a gamble. There's no guarantee. Quit having this attitude that it's guaranteed the communists are going to win. Because then what? That just leads to frustration. Last thing holding this shit show together is a sense of relative economic prosperity. Now, a lot of people don't realize things have already gotten as bad as they have because the government's papering it over. They're talking right now, and probably by the time this show airs, they will have passed another COVID relief bill, and you're going to get a whopping $600. They had to make it a law where you couldn't get kicked out of your house for not paying your rent because they knew people wouldn't be able to pay their rent. Why? Because they destroyed the economy, or they're in the process of destroying the economy. But at some point in time, you're asking to get kicked out for not paying your rent. They're not going to let you live there for free forever. They're going to pay you to not work forever. The government cannot indefinitely paper over this economic disaster. The unemployment numbers are already through the freaking roof. They just keep extending it, and the feds are chipping in with the state to pay you. You got people making as much or more to stay home. And you sit there and tell those people how the economy's tanked, and they're like, I'm doing pretty damn good. I'm making more than I was before, and I don't have to do shit. But that's not going to last forever. At some point in time, they're going to pull them off the tit. And guess what? Then they're going to find out the economy's destroyed. The sense of relative economic prosperity goes out the window. And that's the last thing holding the shit show together. Do not have the attitude that oh, well, it's inevitable they win. Then you've already defeated yourself before ever doing something. You can't have that. Look, things are taking place that they don't have control. They don't control. They're not omnipotent. They don't control everything. They've taken a huge gamble with this. They're going to sacrifice for a huge power grab. And I think it's a short-sighted gamble. But they are taking the gamble that somehow they'll have enough power to force people to force a shit show to stay together, even as people have nothing, literally nothing left to bind them together. Will it work? I can say we don't know if it'll work. But one thing's for sure, you're not going to know, and it's not going to matter to you one way or the other. If your life gets all screwed up because somebody, be it the government, trying to send you to a war that has nothing to do with you, or somebody else calling for you to do something that's ill-conceived and not thought out, the point here is, you're not going to be able to see it through, and none of it's going to matter if you get your life screwed up or destroyed because you allowed somebody to misguide and manipulate your patriotism. We're going to run along today. I can see that I've already. But you know, it's a Christmas. It's a Merry Christmas. So yeah, let's get on in here. Fill those pews. Let's get into our Christian-specific message this weekend. Of course, it's got to be a Christian. Of course, it's a Christian message. It's got to be a Christmas. A Christmas. Oh, they hate that term. They want it to be Xmas. They want it to be Happy Holidays. They hate that word. It's like holy water on a vampire. Get the Christ out of Christmas. We don't want to see that. You got to be inclusive. They never worry about being inclusive for any of these other holidays, do they? They never worry about inclusiveness. You know, oh, happy 4th of July. Well, what if I'm not an American? That's not very inclusive, is it? Oh my gosh. Happy Hanukkah. That's not very inclusive, is it? Doesn't matter. But Christmas is just not inclusive enough. You got to be inclusive. You're not allowed to have that Christ word. So let's not talk about that. Let's do happy holidays. Let's talk about Santa. Let's get out there. Got a big sale going on. And you're going to have a virtual Santa this year because there's a doom flu, don't you know? There's a virus. Can't go sit on Santa's lap, even though he's wearing a mask and a face shield. You can't do it. Christmas is canceled. Christmas is canceled. Maybe happy holidays won't be. I don't know. But anyway, yes, we are going to do a Christmas discussion sermon this week. So let's get that rolling. It was a good time. It was a good time to pause and go make you a fresh cup of coffee. That's what I did. So, yes, I'm sitting here now with my fresh cup of coffee. Hopefully, you're comfy. Hopefully, you're cozy. Now, we all know this is the Christmas edition of the show. So, you're probably thinking, well, you might even be kind of like thinking you're going to sleep through this week's message. He's probably just going to read the verses about the birth of Jesus and talk about the bright star and things such as that. But I'm not going to do that, much to your surprise. We're going to pass over. We're of course going to point it out. I think everybody is aware of the story of the birth of Jesus, you know, in a manger. Jesus, were you born in a barn? Jesus would be like, yes, I was. What's your manners, Jesus? Were you born in a barn? Yes, as a matter of fact. And be like, oh, I'm sorry, Master. I it's okay. Don't feel awkward because God has a sense of humor. I believe that. You look, I was thinking about this, you know, how the leftists are so devoid of humor. And like when they try to be funny, it falls flat because they have no sense of humor. There is no ability to actually find humor. They just point and do repetitive Orange Man bad jokes and people who aren't good thinkers like us, people who aren't a part of our group, they're stupid. They do this and that's their humor. It's not funny at all. They don't do humor because I believe humor itself is a gift from God. I really do. I believe that, you know, we're made in the image of God. And so with that, the fact that we have a sense of humor means that is something from God. The devil is like the most humorless entity in existence. And you can see that reflected in his minions. They have no sense of humor. They can't laugh at anything. They can't. They don't have anything. When they do, it's just vulgarities, you know, when they try to do something like humor, it's either a rendition of anybody not us, anybody or Orange Man bad, whatever, you know, anybody not us is stupid, or they have to do something about, you know, taking a dump or something, and that's supposed to be hilarious. And anybody with a real sense of humor looks at this tepid shit and they're like, that's not funny. Not funny at all. So no, it's okay. God has a sense of humor. I just thought that was funny. Jesus, were you born in a barn? Yes, I was born in a barn, and what of it? But we do. We know the story. No room at the inn. No room at the inn. Jesus, basically, they had to hold up. They had to make do with some straw and a stable. Mary gave birth to Christ in the stable. One of the great, and what was his parents' occupation? Because, you know, social status is always a thing. They're simple, you know. Joseph. He was a carpenter. So you've got what should be a completely unremarkable event, historically speaking. I mean, really, think about this. Historically speaking, even if you're a non-believer, you stick around for these segments, good on you. If you're a non-believer and you don't believe any of this, Jesus is the Son of God, business, whatever, you have to admit it's awful remarkable that something that is a completely unremarkable event, historically speaking, you know, a carpenter's child was born in a stable, you know, back in those days because there wasn't any room in him. So what? It's just, you know, it's not something that exactly makes history, and yet it did, and it has. One of the things that became a great, you know, that was such a great stumbling block is because the way people think and the way people work is not the way God works. And how God uses the humble things, you know, I mean, he was not born into the priest class. He was not born of a high social status. Christ came into this world as a carpenter's child. That is the way he came into the world. Not under the high priest class, not as somebody born into an aristocratic high social standing family. Just among the workers. Isn't that amazing? Just born into a regular worker's family. One thing, you know, the Antichrist, the Marxists, if you notice how much they hate working class people, they just show utter disdain for them. They do. They hate them. And you have to wonder if part of that is because of the fact that God seems to have a special affinity for, you know, working class people, the regular people. Christ came into this world as the child of a regular working family. And yet the minions of Satan hate the workers. They hate regular working people. They look down upon, they are looked on with disdain. Those who are held in high esteem are these made up celebrities with all of this plastic surgery that never actually seem to do anything, but yet they're rich and they're famous. And these are the people who are shown and paraded about and put on TV and in social media, and you're told they're important. Nobody asks why the hell they're important, but they are. And they're fake. They're as fake as their plastic titties they're bouncing around in, their big puffy lips or whatever the hell. They're all fake. There's nothing there. They're fake people. But these same people, the people that promote them and tell you that these are what's important, these are the important people in your society, they look on the worker with utter disdain. They hate the worker. I wonder if some of that is just resentment. Satan resents that Christ came into the world via a working class family. We are going to do scripture reading, by the way. We're going to read you're putting your Bible away too soon. We're going to do Mark chapter 11. Let's start at verse 27 and roll with it till the end. And I think we can expand on this a little bit. And they came again to Jerusalem. And as he was walking in the temple, there come to him the chief priests and the scribes and the elders, and say unto him. Now let's stop here for a minute. Jesus done been going out there doing miracles. Jesus has been out there healing sick people, healing crippled people. And these weren't just like, you know, these were people that had been crippled their whole life. Everybody, these were small towns. What they would call a city then, you know, would not qualify as a city now. They didn't have these mega cities that we have now. So you would go into a town and there's probably, I don't know, 150, 200 people that lived in this town. And, you know, everybody knew this guy over here has been blind. He was born blind. He was born as baby blind. He's been blind his whole life. And Jesus would show up and heal these people. And it couldn't be. They couldn't sit here and say that they would have if they could. They couldn't run around and say, oh, it was faked. He faked that. He brought this guy and claimed the guy was blind, then acted like he healed. They couldn't do that because Jesus made it a point to go heal people that the people in the town knew. These are individuals in the town. And it's like, yeah, I've known this guy his whole life. He's born blind. Everybody knows he's blind. Been stumbled around. When we were kids, we'd go around poking him with a stick and ask him who did it. You know, because kids are cruel like that. And everybody knew. And he would show up and heal him. So they couldn't run around and say, oh, he faked it. Because everybody, you couldn't fake it. We've known this guy his whole life. Jesus was going around, you know, healing people. Everybody knew their whole life. Healing people that were older than Jesus himself. So, you know, no, there was no faking it. But he's been going around, he's been doing these miracles. And they can't deny that he's been doing these things. So what do they think? What do they come up with? And say unto him, by what authority doest thou these things? They don't hear that he's been able to do. You might would think the light would go off and they would be like, man, this might be a big deal here. Might want to get on board. I want to get lined up. This is a huge thing. This guy's going around hiring. Healing blind people and crippled people. He's doing these miracles. Might be something to it, but no, what are they going to do? They do the same thing. They did the same thing that they do today. Appeal to authority. Who's your mom and daddy? Who's your family? By what authority? Where's your degree? What college did you go to? What a seminary? Under which priest? Under which? Where's your government license? Your certificate that says you're allowed to do that? Never mind. He's been hiring. I keep wanting to say hiring. He's been healing blind people and healing crippled people and people with all sorts of infirmities, leprosy. Everything going around. He could even go around and heal people from the COVID. Well. Probably not. He'd probably be like, no, go home. You'll get over that shit yourself. I'm sure he wouldn't say it that way. But yeah, he'd be like, go home. You'd be healed of that yourself. But the point here is, that you see the same thing. The appeal to authority. Never mind what he does. Never mind considering what it is he's done. By what authority doest thou these things? And who gave thee this authority to do these things? They always want to put you on the defensive. They did that. Here they are doing Jesus. Duh, defend your position. By whose authority? As if he has to answer to them. You know, these guys are long dead. And I like to think about them being like, you know, after they died and, you know, remembering by, you know, like a replay, like there's like a big screen and a replay. By whose authority doest thou these things? And now they're standing there. They're dead now. Their bodies are rotten in the ground. And now they stand before the judgment seat and there's Jesus at the right hand of God. And they're like, oh, oh, that quote didn't age well. It's always the appeal to authority. Who are you? He's a carpenter, son. Who's this guy? He's not one of our group. And Jesus answered and said unto them, I will also ask of you one question and answer me, and I will tell you by what authority I do these things. See, Jesus refuses to be, take a lesson here. Jesus refuses to go on the defensive. They framed this as, now go on the defensive. By whose authority? Defend yourself. What authority? Whose authority? Who gave you this authority? Jesus is like, I'll answer your question, but answer me first, and I will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or of men? Answer me. You see, he just like that, flipped the script. Now who's on the defense? Let's see how they handle this. Surely they want to know the truth. They want to get to the truth of this matter, right? These are supposed to be people of high esteem, religious leaders of the time. And they reasoned with themselves. See, they had to have a council about this. They couldn't just speak up and say, well, I think. No, they had, okay, let's get over here. Huddle up. They convene the council real quick. And they reasoned with themselves saying, if we shall say from heaven, he will say, why then did ye not believe him? But if we shall say of men, well, they feared the people, for all men counted John that he was a prophet indeed. Notice how the truth doesn't factor in here. They truly are their father, the devil. It wasn't, okay, well, I wonder which one is true. It's just, how should we play this out? Okay, how should we play this? The truth is, what's the truth here? They don't care about that. How do we play this out? Because, you know, if we say from heaven, he's going to point out that we persecuted him and didn't believe him. But if we say of men, we could get lynched out here because the people all believe he, you know, it won't play well politically. The people all believe he's a prophet. We've been able to just kind of ignore it and pass it off. And it's worked out thus far. Now who's on the defensive? But the truth never factors in here. It's never, they didn't huddle up to figure out the truth of the matter, how they might answer. It was just, how can we play this where it works out for us? And they answered and said unto Jesus, we cannot tell. That's the best I can come up with. We don't know. We cannot tell. And Jesus answering saith unto them, neither do I tell you by what authority I do these things. Jesus, never on the defensive. They've rigged this up, puffing themselves up as if they had the authority to demand he defend himself. And he just like that, just flips the script on them. He knew their motivations. The truth never factored in. They just huddle up. They just try to figure out, how can we play this politically? How can we spin this? I can imagine that they went away from there just red faced, just because they get showed up by what? Somebody born into a lowly working class people that have calluses on their hands and get their hands dirty. Who is this guy? But what authority? Who does he think he is? I even heard he was born in a barn. He's not of the priestly class. He is not of authority. He is not somebody. And see, it's the same game. You see the same game today. God does things a lot. It's so hard to understand. Because he doesn't reason. We cannot know his mind. God does things in a way that he sees fit. And sometimes, with a little hindsight and a little insight, you can kind of get the drift of why he does these things. I mean, you think about it. If you were thinking about it, wouldn't it make more sense to have Jesus born into a, family of, that had a high standing in the religious community? It would have just cleared the way. He would have had a lot easier going if he was born into the family of the high priest. Everybody would take it for granted. Well, this guy has authority. He was born into the family of the high priest. But see, that's the problem. The authority would come from man. Jesus was born in a barn to a working class family. Grew up getting his hands dirty, working with wood. Working class person. You see, because God doesn't want the glory can't go to men. People can't go back later and say, of course this guy had standing. He started off just with one foot in the door already. He was born into a family of high standing in the religious community, but he wasn't. You see, it had to come from God. Now, let's circle back to what I pointed out early on. What an unamazing historic event. You think Jesus was the only working class baby born in a barn at some point? I mean, babies were born out in the woods. I mean, babies would be born when people were in the middle of a journey and they couldn't make it to a village or a town. So they just had to lay a blanket or something down on the ground, pop the kid out. Historically speaking, a working class family having a baby in a barn is not an amazing event. And yet everybody knows that event today. The Antichrists, those who hate Christ, those who hate all that is good, they're triggered by nativity scenes because it reminds them. But it was what? It's a scene of what should be a completely unmemorable event. But yet we speak about it today. We celebrate this event today. And the very reason is because it wasn't something of men. This was the work of God. I have a hard time believing this. I have a hard time believing any of that. What is the likelihood that a working class baby being born in a barn several thousands of years ago would still be something talked about and celebrated today if it was just a random event? I don't care how good your marketing plan is. It's not going to last that long. God does things in a way to where there can be no mistaking. If you look at it objectively with an eye for the truth, there's no mistaking that it is something that God has done. Because it's not the way men would do it. I can say, if men were planning, Christ coming into the world, it would make sense that he would be born into the royal priesthood or something, born into the family of the high priest that year. Who would sit here and plan this out and say, well, let's have him be born into, a working class family. Let's for double lulls, let's put it in a barn. But see, God wants it to make it a point that this is something that only he could do. If you could take credit, if men could take credit for it, then there's no point. And this is relevant because God still operates the same way today. He positions things, he does things to where when he accomplishes what he is going to accomplish, you can't thwart what God plans to do. Satan cannot thwart it. The communists cannot thwart God's plan. This is why they rage and hate so much. But when he does what he intends to do, nobody can jump in front of that and take credit for it. He does it in a manner to where you can't help but say, well, only God could do that. Only God could make it to where a completely unamazing event like a baby being born in a stable somewhere is talked about and celebrated thousands of years later. Man, men could not come up and make that happen. It's just not going to. But yet it is. It's here. We still celebrate it today because it is not of men. It is ultimately of God. Christ's birth was the beginning of the ball rolling to the ultimate defeat of Satan. Don't be surprised that they hate you for celebrating Christmas. Don't be surprised that they try to turn it into something else. Don't be surprised that they vandalize your nativity scenes or about right ban them. Don't be surprised that the government and then all of your oligarchs are sitting around debating on whether they should even allow you to have Christmas. Isn't it funny? All these stories, they didn't say cancel the holidays. They said cancel Christmas. Because if you're celebrating it, they demand you just go with something generic like Happy Holidays. But when they talk about banning it, they talk about Christmas. Christmas shouldn't be allowed. They just can't help themselves. They hate Christ because when Christ was born, this birth that we celebrate, Christmas, we celebrate the birth of Christ, this was the beginning of the end. When Christ was crucified and resurrected, the outcome of the war was settled. The outcome of the conflict was then predetermined, and Satan lost. Now we're just going through the stage where him and his minions run around raging and destroying and burning as much down, destroying as many people as they possibly can on their way out the door to hell. But this was the beginning. Once this was completed, it was set in stone. Satan's defeat was written into the card. That was it. It was inevitable. He lost. Now they're just burning the city down on their way out. It truly is a cause for celebration. Because you love Jesus, I should hope you do, because you love the truth. You love what is good. He is the way, the truth, and the life. These things you love. But we also celebrate Christmas because it signifies the beginning of our victory. I talked earlier about not getting into this mindset where we're determined to lose. That is an anti-Christian mindset. It is a trap. It is a lie from the devil. You need to dispel yourself of it. This temporal realm is very temporary. And whether in this realm or for sure in the eternal realm, victory is yours. The victory is ours. Christmas symbolizes this. We celebrate this. Yes, it is the celebration of the birth of Christ who redeems us from our sins. But as much more, it's a celebration of our victory. We've got this. God has got this. Why are we afraid? Why do we run around feeling defeatist as if we haven't won the battle? The outcome has already been settled. We just have to do our part. We just have to trust in He who is in charge. And is ultimately God. And it ultimately started thousands of years ago with the unamazing event of a working class family's baby being born in a barn. We got to wrap up on that note. Long as usual. Imagine that. I told you the show was going to stay the same. Thank you for joining us this week. Good times. I do hope you have a great Christmas. I really just shed yourself of some of the happenings and the goings on as best you can, and remember who you are and what you celebrate. Be grateful for what you have around, those you have around you, and all that you do have. Just take a little bit, take a deep breath. Cheer up. It's all going to be good. I do hope you do have a great Christmas though. Have a Merry Christmas, and I hope you'll join us next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.